Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, welcome everyone. Today's show is all about mindful health and wellness and our collective consciousness. My first guest is Dr. Beverly Potter, and she wants to know if you are a worrywart. Do you lie in bed awake at night, tossing and turning, churning that same worry over in your head? Or do you find yourself becoming so obsessed you can't concentrate? Or maybe you catastrophize every situation and always imagine the worst case scenario. Well, she's got some really positive solutions that you can put into effect today and help you get a good night's sleep because you won't be worrying. Coming up around 12:30, like many people, Alan Smith turned to alternative therapies only when mainstream medicine failed him. He's now so convinced of the benefits that he's developed the complete guide to complementary and alternative therapies, and he's joining us later to discuss some of the lesser known modalities. And Jennifer Yost, many of you might already know of Jennifer. She's my third guest today. She's a psychotherapist and Reiki practitioner here in Seattle. And she's also the founder and driving force behind The One Gathering. It's a Northwest event. It's coming at the end of this month. And it's described, let me read it, as a multi-sensory experience to encompass and support the expansion of consciousness. So we'll find out more about that around 12:40 today. First, I want to welcome Dr. Beverly Potter. She's a Stanford graduate with offices based in Berkeley, California. She's noted for challenging the status quo and her fresh perspectives and insights. Dr. Potter's work combines humanistic psychology, social learning theory, and Eastern philosophies. And she's also a recognized expert on how to overcome job burnout. Her new book is called The Worrywart's Companion, 21 Ways to Soothe Yourself and Worry Smart. Dr. Beverly Potter, welcome.
Hello, I'm delighted to be with you today.
Just a little book this, but it's packed full of great information. Give us a little insight into the book and why you put this together. What makes it different from other books on worry? Because a lot's been written about this subject and people are still worrying.
And they will still worry because it's human nature to worry, but the way that it's different from the other books is, even though I'm a trained psychologist, I don't like psychobabble. And so many of the books on this topic basically define a person who worries as somebody who is neurotic or some other word they might use, and it's filled with all kinds of psychobabble and therapist talk. This book is not like that at all. This book is aimed at, first of all, it approaches worry as a learned behavior, and it's aimed at helping people gain skills and learning how to think in different ways, and does not define a person as a neurotic, quote-unquote, but this is a normal thing that people do. Some people do it a little too much. And that's worry-warding.
Right. And you said it's a learned behavior. So do you find that it runs in families?
Well, definitely it does, because we learn from our parents and our siblings, and especially young children. We model, which means copy, and we pick up the way, you know, our mother did it and our father does it and whatever. And, you know, some families have substance abuse running through the family. That's how they learn to cope with problems. Some have worry warts. There were definitely world-class worry warts in my family.
Now, doesn't everybody worry? So, I mean, to some extent, right? So you're not talking just, you know, an occasional worry here. You're talking, what are you talking exactly?
Well, worry warting is, sometimes we call it obsessing. It's getting trapped in the worry, going around and around in the endless loop, thinking the same words even over and over and over, not really solving anything. Worry itself is good. Worry is a productive thing to do. We worry through a problem. We identify something that is a potential problem, and then we come up with contingencies. Well, if that happens, I'll do this or this or this. We don't want to not worry, because then we'll just be hit with things that we haven't anticipated.
Right.
But the problem with the worry ward is that the person gets into what we might call rut thinking, and they just think that same thing over and over. They're not solving the problem. They're just riling themselves up, becoming tremendously anxious. Then the anxiety triggers more worry, and then that worry triggers more anxiety, and pretty soon the person is just a nervous wreck. They're literally worrying themselves sick.
And I've been in that situation.
Well, we all have.
But it can be very serious if it's left unchecked. It can cause all kinds of imagined or real issues, can't it?
Well, yes, because it can get out of control. And it's the nature of the process to get a little worse each time. And in some extreme cases, people have panic attacks, and it is so extreme they don't even realize that it's panic. They think they're having a heart attack, and people have gone to the hospital in an ambulance.
Wow.
Can you imagine? And then what happens is they begin to worry that will happen again. And some people who are really extreme cannot leave their house for fear that they will have a panic attack. And some people are so extreme, they can't leave the bathroom.
Wow.
And so then we're talking about serious dysfunction.
Right.
And that is called agoraphobia. Some people say, oh, that's the fear of open space. No, it's the fear of fear. It's the fear of having a panic attack.
Oh, interesting. I always thought it was the fear of open space. I did not know that.
Well, it's kind of the open space, meaning stepping out of your house into the openness. But it's really a fear that you're going to have a panic attack.
Okay.
And, of course, if you sit around, it's like that old thing of don't think of an elephant.
Right, and you think of it.
And that's all you can think of. You know?
Right,
so when you start
right.
telling yourself, now don't get panicked, then you start getting panicked.
Right. Right. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, and we're going to look at some solutions that we can start implementing today.
Yes.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Dr. Beverly Potter. Her new book is called The Worry Wart's Companion, 21 Ways to Soothe Yourself and Worry Smart. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Spread the word. You don't have to settle for the usual talk radio. Now there's alternative talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in the segment is Dr. Beverly Potter, her book, The Worry Wart's Companion. And our whole goal here today is to try and give you some tips about how you can stop worrying and how you can get a good night's sleep, because we all know we don't function too well without one. So one of the things we talked about in the first segment, Dr. Potter, was how worry can be a learned behavior and it can get worse if we let it get out of control. I wanted to talk about neurosignatures, because that kind of ties into worry and how it gets worse and we create these patterns that just go on and on. So
yes.
tell us a little
bit
about
that. Well, what happens is every time you think something, the thought goes down a neural pathway. So when you think the same thing over and over, these thought habits, pretty soon it's almost like the skid is greased. We just go down that same path, and pretty soon it becomes like automatic thinking, just an abbreviated thought that we learn these things. For example, let's just say you're a young child and your parent says to you, you know, you're never going to amount to anything. And pretty soon the child starts saying that to himself or herself, I'll never amount to anything. And they say it over and over, and then pretty soon they're not even aware of it. It just flashes through their mind. They go, never amount to anything, never anything. And instantly, all the thoughts, all the feelings, everything around that just come to fore instantaneously because it's this habitual thought, this neural pathway. And so these thinking habits are awfully hard to break, just like smoking is hard to break and some other bad habits we have. But the fact is, we can change these things. It's going to take some effort, but the payoff is tremendous.
Right. Now, you talk about the fact that we have two minds. We have a rational mind and we have an emotional mind.
Right.
The brain, as we've heard many times, doesn't know the difference between a real or an imagined event.
Right.
I wonder if you'd just talk about the difference between emotional and rational.
You can say, I mean, some people have different names for it, but the emotional, rational mind. Well, the rational mind, we know what that is. That's this very calm, thinking things through, challenging things and so on. But if you could imagine that somewhere behind it is this emotional mind, and actually in there, I like to think of the metaphor of an eye. There's like this alertness or this vigilance, this eye that is always watching, and it is saying, am I okay? Is everything safe? Am I safe? Is there a problem? Is there a threat? And so then then it picks up on even a little bit of anxiety, or maybe you've been drinking coffee all day. Well, that feels like anxiety.
Yeah.
And this thing goes, wait a minute, I'm anxious. Must be a problem. There's a problem here. And then it starts looking for something to be that problem, and that's the worry. Now, sometimes when something is so extreme, for example, one time I went to dinner with my husband and some friend's house. We parked the car on the side of the street. There were trees. We came out a few hours later. It's dark. I'm not paying too much attention. I reached in to get into the passenger side. I reached for the door handle of the car, and as I reached forward, I wasn't even aware of it. I suddenly started screaming and threw myself back. I didn't even know why I was doing this at first, because it was in the book Emotional Intelligence, the author talks about an emotional hijacking. That's what happened. The emotional mind took over. This eye saw a threat. And what was the threat? It was this three-inch, I'm getting goosebumps remembering this three-inch spider that had made a garden spider, that made a web to the door handle while we were in there. And as I leaned in, my cheek came about an inch from that thing. And if I had touched it, and if it had fallen on me, I would have died on the spot, I guarantee. And this emotional eye saw that thing before my rational mind had any awareness, grabbed my body and flung me away from the danger. And as I was sort of flying backwards, then the rational mind clicked in and said, oh my God, it's a spider. Well, this is what can happen to people who are serious worry warts. They start thinking things and they get images and words in their mind that they scare themselves. They go to the ultimate worst case scenario, and then this emotional mind can just take over and blot out rationality, and the body thinks it's real what they're saying. And so the body just mobilizes into the fight flight. The muscles are tense, the heart is pounding, you're breathing fast, and, no digestive is going to the stomach because we don't need to digest, we're in an emergency, and this is a panic attack.
So, and we can counteract this by starting to learn to worry smartly. So define for us what you mean,
I got the idea of worrying smart. I mean, I use that as a metaphor. Some people say being a productive worrier. We can call it different things. I like the worry smart because I was studying that work, the emotional intelligence, and the emotionally intelligent person, there's a bunch of characteristics, and one of them is the ability to soothe oneself. And I thought, aha, the worrywart riles himself or herself up. The smart worrier soothes herself. So the idea is, and so I've come up with several different ways to worry smart, meaning think about the problem in a way where we come up with a plan, a solution, rather than going around and around scaring ourselves to death. And then once we get that solution, then we realize, wait a minute, I'm riled up from doing this. I need to actively bring myself back to balance, actively soothe myself. So one of the ways that main techniques, there's many for becoming a smart worrier, but one is to talk to yourself like a good friend would. A worrywart talks to herself like a fuddy-duddy. I like to use these metaphors. Easier to remember.
Right.
FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Oh, that's
a fuddy-duddy riles themselves up, creates fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Well, that little character is speaking in one ear, and in the other ear is the good friend. Well, good friends, when you tell them about your worry, they tend to be, it's not their worry, they can be very rational about it. And they'll go, you know, I think you're getting this, taking this to an extreme. Or, have you ever looked at it this way? Or, come on, give yourself a break. Or, come on, let's go to a movie. Or maybe they make a joke out of it. So we can catch ourselves. One of the problems is we're not even aware of it when we're worrying half the time. And, for example, I drive up to this cabin I have twice a month, and I like to listen to novels on the radio. And sometimes I'm going along, all of a sudden I realize I haven't heard a word of that thing.
Right, right.
Why? Because I'm so absorbed in something or other I'm chewing over in my mind. The radio, the tape is going, but I'm not hearing it. And I'm not even aware of it, you see. So we can't do anything until we become aware of ourselves worrying. It's a good idea to worry on purpose and study it.
Well, you even go as far as to say set a time for worrying, set a place to worry. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, if you set aside a place, and it's a separate place, you don't sit in your bed as your worry place because you want to keep your bed a place where you sleep.
Right.
You take a different place and you say, okay, this is going to be my worry place. And then you go there and you at first deliberately worry and watch yourself worrying. So you're like two people. You're the worrier and you're the watcher. Sometimes in people call it the observer. And you're studying. You're not trying to change it. You're just seeing how you do it because each person does it a little differently. It's like, well, how do I start myself worrying? Oh, I see. I say this and this and this. So you allow yourself to do it so you can see how you do it. Then you can come up with a plan. But you go to this place to worry. Well, it turns out, if we look at the principles of conditioning and learning, if something happens in the presence of a quote-unquote stimulus, which would be your worry place, that stimulus can take on the power to trigger an emotion because you had this serious emotion in the presence of that stimulus. So by having the worry place, you can go there, worry on purpose. Pretty soon, just going there, you kind of feel like worrying. You worry through the problem, and then you leave the place with the idea of leaving the worry there, too. Start worrying again, go back to that place.
So it's all about neuro-associations, really, associating that particular place with worrying so you can get it, centralize it, and not let it permeate throughout the rest of your house.
It's a way of getting control of the worry. Now, you still may be worrying like a worrywart.
Right.
The way a worrywart worries, because what worry really is us talking to ourselves in our head, or else picturing things, terrible disasters, in our head. And what we need to do is learn a new way of talking. But once we start worrying, it's so powerful, and it triggers so much anxiety, it's hard to ad lib at that time. It's really a good idea to have something prepared, because really the major technique is to crowd out the worry, because you can only be thinking one thing at a time. And if you're thinking these scary thoughts, because worries are usually all the disasters that could happen, the body gets riled up. The body thinks the disaster is going to happen any minute. You want to crowd that out. So there are various things you can do to crowd it out. Talk to yourself like a good friend would. some people like to pray. And then about 80% of the American population actually prays.
Or even meditate. We can use that interchangeably.
It's another kind of a prayer, essentially.
Right.
But what is a meditation or a prayer? Is because the meditation is usually repeating, it's usually some kind of a mantra, and a mantra is something a person is saying repetitively, or in transcendental meditation, it's a sound that they repeat over and over, because the mind is not going to be blank. There's always this chatter or these words going on. You cannot just say, stop worrying, because mm-hmm. you're not going to stop. It's not going to be a vacuum. You need to crowd it out. So if you crowd it out with a meditation, the mantra, or the prayer, or something else, literally talking to yourself about the worry. I see, you're saying this. And people can walk around talking to themselves now without looking nuts because of the, you know, the Bluetooth in their
ears. That's true.
You know, I see somebody walking down the street, I go, there's a crazy person. And I go, oh, no, they're on
the
phone.
Yeah, we used to call them crazy
right.
people. Now they're just Bluetooth
now we can get away
people.
With this, okay, without being declared crazy. It's actually helpful. Especially in the beginning, we can give it a label, and then it sounds okay, self-instruction, okay?
Okay.
We instruct ourselves. We go, oh, I know that I'm worrying now. See, I can't be worrying when I'm saying this to myself. I see that I'm worrying now, and this is a good time for me to say my prayer or to say my affirmation, whatever it is that I have pre-planned, pre-practiced, because the worry is very strong. And this new behavior is very weak.
Now, another good point you make is, you know, many worries seem insurmountable to us. Break it up into small pieces, just like we would a project.
That's exactly right. And really, worrying, in a sense, productive or smart worry, is problem solving. So one of the things, the worry wart, they have this rut thinking. They just keep thinking the same thing over and over. And it just generates more anxiety. The flexible thinker or the smart thinker, and somebody could write these six steps on a card. Like right now, I'm looking at the six steps.
Okay, let's
run through them. And then I can remember
them. Oh, let's run through them really quickly because we're almost at the end.
What are the facts? What are the facts of this situation? Really good to even write these down. So you focus only on the facts. Then the next one is, how do I feel about these facts? And you look at that. And then you say, what about this situation is working? That's the third step. The fourth one, what's possible here? And then the fifth one, what worry warts love, what could go wrong or what's going wrong? And then the next one is, well, what would be the next step? Well, see, this is a more productive problem-solving kind of thinking than just thinking the scary thing over and over and over and visualizing some horrible thing that is just really freaking you out.
Like
your husband is a half an hour late, and the worry wart will immediately go, what if he had a car wreck? What if he ran off with that girl in the office? What if, and then they're off to the races. And then the first worry generates anxiety, and then you just leap to a more severe worry, and another, and another, but then by the time your husband comes home, you're enraged and scream at him, "Well, you're so happy that he's alive!"
Right, but now we have your six steps, and we can take control of that situation before it gets. Dr. Potter, we're right at the end of our segment, actually, but I want to just say before we go, you do stress in there that being a smart worrier isn't going to happen overnight. It's not an either-or situation.
It takes practice. It takes practice, and you get better and better at it.
Well, I really appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it.
One thought you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
One good way to dispel worry is to make it into a joke or laugh at it, because laughter dispels anxiety.
There we go. And listeners can find you at docpotter.com.
That's right. D-O-C.
P-O.
And Potter, like Harry.
Harry Potter. Yeah, okay. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Beverly Potter is my guest. Her book, The Worry Wart's Companion, 21 Ways to Soothe Yourself and Worry Smart. And you can find more information. She's got a lot of information on her website at docpotter.com. Please stay with us. We'll be joined by Alan Smith when we come back. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Trust is the cornerstone of your business and personal life. But do you really understand what trust is or how to develop trust in all areas of your life? Award-winning author and speaker Vanessa Hall joins Vicki to discuss the truth about trust in business. We'll also talk with photographer's agent and stock photography diva Danita Delamon, a local businesswoman who's developed an international million-dollar business built on trust.
Write it down, shout it loud. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. Now, wasn't that fun?
Be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
And welcome back. I was sleeping on the job there because I was enjoying the music. My next guest is Alan E. Smith. A few years ago, his deteriorating health took him to one of the most famous medical facilities in the world, the Mayo Clinic. His doctor there told him, well, Alan, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is your condition won't kill you. The bad news is you're not going to like it, and there's very little we can do about it. That set him on his search for some answers on his own, and that's when he turned to alternative healing for to find some solutions. He also wrote his first book. It's called Unbreak Your Health, The Complete Guide to Complementary and Alternative Therapies. So let's bring Alan on and find out more about that. Welcome, Alan.
Good afternoon, Vicki. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. And I wanted just to introduce what your issues were to our listeners and what made you turn to alternative medicine in the first place, and how you came about finding a solution for yourself.
My personal health problem was digestive issues. I was about a half an inch from living on baby food at that point in my life, and that's what took me up to the Mayo Clinic. And as you said, they gave me the traditional doctor's joke of good news and bad news, and I said, well, obviously I've run out of options in the world of mainstream medicine, because I was sitting at the finest medical facility in the world, and they didn't have any answers, and I certainly wasn't going to spend the rest of my life in that condition, so the only option was to start down the path of complementary alternative medicine. And the good news is I found some wonderful therapies that have done amazing things to bring my health back past the point that the doctors even thought was possible, what I call unbreaking your health. So I just, this is the book that I wish had been available at that point in my life at Mayo Clinic. On once the doctors say that there's nothing more that they can do, the truth is that doesn't mean that there's nothing more that can be done. There's a world of wonderful therapies out there, but where do you find them? How do you get started?
Well, how did you get started? Because you're not a doctor. You don't have a medical background, right?
No, ma'am. I'm just a patient, like millions of others.
So how did you get started?
The process has a lot of names. Some people call it inner healer or divine guidance or synchronicity. In my case, it was probably just dumb luck, but I ran across a book literally less than 2 weeks after I came back from Mayo Clinic by Bruce Lipton called Biology of Belief, which was basically just what the title says, that your feelings and your beliefs have the power to change your body, what we now call the science of epigenetics. And I said, well, that's exactly the news I wanted to hear after being up at Mayo. And it got to the end of the book, and I said, Bruce, it doesn't tell me how to do this. And he says, no, I'm a cellular biologist by trade. That's not my department. You have to talk to somebody else. And fortunately, he did mention a guy in Colorado by the name of Rob Williams and the Psych-K process. And that was my first stepping stone, you know, across the stream to find better health.
Mm. Well, I picked out three healing modalities from the book that I hadn't heard of, and this was one of them, Psych-K, the one that helped you. Tell us a little bit about what went into getting you better using the Psych-K process, what it is.
Psych-K is based on muscle testing, or what's also called applied kinesiology, and it's basically the lie detector that you carry around with you. If you put your arm out and you repeat that my name is Alan, then if somebody presses on my arm, it'll stay straight and strong because my conscious and subconscious agree on that point. But if I say my name is Vicky St. Clair and somebody pushes on my arm, well, my arm's going to go down, or what they call unlocking, because my subconscious says, wait a minute, you're not a woman, your name's not Vicky, you know, this just doesn't add up. And there's, right, in that confusion, just for a moment or two between the conscious and subconscious, the nervous system is a little out of whack, and in turn, the muscles lose a little strength. And when you push down, it says, no, this is not true. We don't agree with this. So,
I actually saw Jack Canfield do this about 20 years ago on stage. He does it a lot on his shows, to demonstrate the power of belief. But I didn't realize it had an official name. So tell us how that helped get you better.
Well, as it turned out, even though my conscious mind was at peace with career problems and other issues in my life, as it turned out, with Psych-K, my subconscious had a whole lot of problems with a lot of the things going on in my life, and a lot of the beliefs that I had about my worth as an individual being totally linked to my career and things of that nature. And once those beliefs were exposed so that I could do balances and correct them, then suddenly the body said, well, everything's starting to get back in sync the way it should be, and the health followed right along.
Interesting. One of the others is called Scanner, and we're looking at healing modalities from the body category, from the spirit and energy category, and from the mind category, and the Psych-K is from the mind category. The Scanner is from the spirit energy category, and that can be spelled S-K-E-N-A-R or S-C-E-N-A-R. Tell us a little bit about that one.
This is one of my favorites, Vicki, because it's actually was classified as a military top secret device in Russia up until perestroika just about 15 years ago. And basically it came about because the Russian military space program decided that they couldn't send every medical device and pill up in the space capsule to take care of the astronauts. They needed something multi-purpose, small, lightweight, that could get the job done. So they turned to their medical community and said, come up with something. And they did. And it was called Scanner.
And
basically,
I'm sorry, that's been around over 20 years, right? But it was kept a military secret, apparently.
Yes, ma'am. It actually developed back in the 70s for Russia, but they kept it very under wraps. And it was a device based on actually traditional Chinese medicine. It's a gadget that reads the energy meridians in the body, determines which ones are functioning properly and which ones aren't, and then it puts in the right amount of the right kind of energy to stimulate the body's own healing mechanism.
And then another one that you talk about in the book, there's over, I think, 100, is there about 140? I forgot the exact number.
138 different categories, but there's actually over 300 different therapies.
Okay. And then
some overlaps.
And then one that we're going to talk about today as well was the Alexander Technique. Tell us a little bit about the Alexander Technique.
Frederick Matthias Alexander, a Shakespearean actor here in America about 100 years ago, who had a small health problem of his own. He had chronic laryngitis, which is a little bit of a problem for an actor.
I'd say.
And the doctors of his day weren't doing much good, so he took it upon himself to find out what was going wrong, why he was suffering this way. And he developed a process of physical education, of training his own body, how to hold his head, how to speak with the right muscles, and how to use his lungs and breathing properly, and solved his own health problem. And the dancers then came to him saying, well, you know, we have health problems too. You know, help us figure out what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
And he developed this entire process of physical education that helps people maximize their performance while minimizing the wear and tear. And today a lot of pro athletes are starting to catch on to it, and it's taught at Juilliard Academy. If you're in the performing arts, many people have heard of it. And in fact, there was just a big study released a year ago in the UK that researched the Alexander technique versus chiropractic care versus the mainstream medicine process of physical therapy and painkillers and muscle relaxers for lower back pain. And the Alexander technique came out number one, head and shoulders above the rest.
Wow. It's really interesting because, as you said, there's 300 different techniques in the book, and I'd not heard of most of them, as you can imagine. But tell us a little bit about why you wanted to put this guide together.
I really wanted something for everybody else to have, the way I wish I'd had it up at the Mayo Clinic. Something that was short and easy to read that just kind of gives you the view from the top of the mountain, the big overview that you can say, okay, here's where I am, here's where I'd like to be, and oh, by the way, that looks like the best way for me to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So it really just covers a lot of different therapies very succinctly. It's kind of the USA Today version or the Reader's Digest version of things.
Right.
But
right.
If it's something that really attracts people, they feel an attraction to the therapy that they need at that point in time in their lives.
Right.
Then there's a website or some other way for them to, you know, go on down their own path and find what works for them.
Right, and you've taken this to the next step. I mean, I want to let our listeners know you have podcasts out there where you talk to practitioners of some of these healing practices. Tell us where they can find more information and they can download your podcasts to find out about specific modalities.
Everything about the book and the podcast is available at www.unbreakyourhealth.com. And there's over 40 different podcasts right now, and I add to them as often as I can. And as you said, each one's really, like the book, just an introduction to the subject. I just had the academic dean for the only College of Naturopathy or Naturopathic Medicine in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, and everybody says, I've never heard of naturopathy. And I said, well, it's only been around for 100 years, and yet people have never heard about it. And now you can get the story of where it came from, what it can do for people, and how it works.
Well, we're almost at the end of our segment, but in a nutshell, tell us what it is since you've mentioned it.
Since I've opened that door?
Right.
It's kind of a variation between osteopathy and chiropractic.
Oh, interesting.
As they say, they use bones as levers, and they're more concerned with the ligaments and the tendons on how the connective tissue works.
Okay, interesting. Well, I know this not only healed your health, but it changed your life. You now go around lecturing and talking on this very subject. You've created the podcasts and the book, and the book is called Unbreak Your Health, The Complete Guide to Complementary and Alternative Therapies. Alan Smith, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your information.
Vicki, I appreciate you having me on.
Sure. And you can find more about Alan and his work at unbreakyourhealth.com, unbreakyourhealth.com. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with Jennifer Yost, and we'll learn about the One Gathering that's coming here to Seattle this month. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Bring back those nights when I held you beside me. Unbreak my
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcast today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. If you have comments or questions on any of our shows, we want to hear from you. Email info@conversationslive.net. Call Vicki toll-free at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or leave a message at our special listener voicemail box, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159.
1150KKNW.com, your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, welcome back. I have my third guest with me today, last but not least, Jennifer Yost. She's here in the studio with me. She's a psychotherapist and Reiki practitioner. And she is also the driving force behind the One Gathering. We're going to find out a little bit more about that. But her experience includes drug, alcohol, and mental health counseling with adolescents and adults. And her expertise lies in the areas of addiction, depression, anxiety, family of origin issues, self-esteem, life transitions, and relationship issues. Quite a bunch there. Jennifer Yost, welcome.
Thank you for having me on your show, Vicki. It's an honor.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you here. You gave me a little Reiki treatment out in the lobby before we started the show today. So tell me what was going on there. I know how I felt afterwards.
Oh, I just basically wanted to allow you to become more centered and in peace in your body. And it's a very calming technique to have you come in and bring your show forth in the best way possible.
I certainly felt really relaxed, and I did feel very centered afterwards, so thanks. So many healing modalities out there. You were a psychotherapist. Why choose Reiki? What was it about Reiki that spoke to you?
Well, on my path, I have been doing traditional talk therapy for the last 13 years of my career, and I happened to spontaneously stumble into the healing art of Reiki by a spontaneous situation with a friend who had hurt herself, and I don't know why, but I went ahead and put my hand where she had hurt herself on her leg, and then something happened to where her pain went away. And that's when I began my quest for figuring out what had just happened, and I found myself in my first Reiki level one class, and then I proceeded on up to all the three levels and became a master teacher a few years back.
Yeah, and I read that you knew that your path was to help others. How did you have that innate knowing?
Well, since about the age of 15, I always was very fascinated by people and behavior. And I knew from that young age that I wanted to be a psychotherapist. But I had no idea I would at all go into the healing arts of doing hands-on healing with people until my later adult life.
So how long have you been doing Reiki?
I have been doing Reiki since 2002, I believe. Yes, 2002.
And did you try other modalities before, or did you pretty much go straight to Reiki?
I went straight to Reiki. I have done my own healing work over the years, and I've tried different Heller work is one kind of body work practice. But I liked Reiki just because you can learn it within a day's time or a weekend workshop. Anyone can learn it, really. It's a very simple yet profound healing system.
Mm. And I know you integrate the two, the counseling and Reiki. You said, and I'm going to quote, "I work to assist you in finding or relearning to trust your inner voice to help you more effectively deal with past trauma or challenging family or social situations." Tell me how that works, how that combines.
Well, what happens in a session with me, if a client is seeking both the traditional talk therapy with the healing energy of Reiki, the reason why I've weaved both of them together is because I feel that sometimes in traditional talk therapy, you can intellectually understand what the issue is, but you're having a difficult time in making that shift you need to start living how you want to live. When you integrate the body-mind into the session via, I use Reiki, but there's many different ways you can do that.
Right,
but
right.
Through Reiki, I can bring the body-mind wisdom into the issue or problem, and then energetically work on the issue or problem through the body. And then the person is able to access that, and it comes in very clear. And then we are able to release that blockage that's on an energetic level, and the person receives that inner shift that they are desiring through the treatment.
Now, we started off the show with Dr. Beverly Potter, who's the Worrywart's companion. She's written that. And you'd mentioned to me before the show that Reiki can definitely help with worry. How does that, it's just an energy shift again?
Yes, because what Reiki does, it helps to restore the body's natural balance on all levels. And that goes not just physically, but emotionally, mentally, and also the spiritual level. And I find that if I am nervous about something, or perhaps I'm obsessing about something, I will just put my hands over my heart or my stomach, and that's a very nice hand position for Reiki to soothe and help, because the energy is just the life force energy that's all around us. It's the energy that makes up the moon, the stars, you and I, and it's a divine loving energy, and it's just very calming and soothing. And as you mentioned before the show, your experience is very peaceful and centering, and it helps me get out of my head. It frees your mind.
Right. So hand over the heart and hand over the stomach.
Yeah, that's
we can do that ourselves.
Yes,
right?
We can.
Yeah, interesting. Now, I know I want to talk about the one gathering. I'm watching the clock here because I do not want to run out of time. But you felt a strong inner calling. I read this on your website, mm-hmm. to take the work you were doing with individuals and take that work to large groups of people at a time. You said that you received clarity and inner guidance in the spring of 2007, and that was when you first produced The One Gathering. Tell us how that clarity came to you.
Well, in my individual work that I do with my clients in my private practice, or when I'm teaching Reiki, I thought, you know, if I can do this on an individual level, why can't I do this work on a massive group level? Well, I can, but how do I do that? So it took about a year's time for me to gain that clarity and insight, and I was on a retreat, and it was like I had a download, and then the next day I received this inspiration in this format called The One Gathering to put together this program in order to reach more people at a time.
Now, it's in its third year. It's at Seattle Center, the Center House Theater, Seattle Center, right?
Yes.
How many people are you expecting to come?
Well, the theater's capacity is 200, so I would love to have 200 people there, because the bigger the crowd, the more impact the work is going to be, because we are going to provide some insight and practical ways into how to disengage the mind and come more from the heart. And the unique part of the program is toward the end of it, myself and fellow Reiki masters will be facilitating energetic healing attunement on the crowd, which basically is to help the heart chakra to expand and to become at a more higher vibratory rate, so you can enhance your experience of joy and compassion towards one another.
Okay. And your mission, I'm just going to share this with our listeners because I think it's important. Your mission, and I'm going to abbreviate it, to expand and lift mass consciousness to a higher vibration of peace and joy, facilitate enlightenment of experiencing the sense of oneness with humanity to create more peace and harmony. You want attendees to walk away feeling what?
Lighter, inspired, unblocked. This is a place where attendees can come, and I would hope it's entertaining for them. That's in the plan, for it to be entertaining, as well as inspiring and to receive enlightenment so they can be expanded in their consciousness, because there is an energetic shift happening on the planet, at least I think so, that people
are
starting to
wake
up.
Well, you're not alone. Yeah, a lot of people do.
You know, the green movement with the environment, people starting to wonder, how can I do some deeper oriented work and serve others in a higher way? Well, I think people are starting to remember, hey, I'm here to serve others. And
right.
So the One Gathering is put in place to help people transition to this higher level of consciousness.
Yeah, I like the name. How did you come up with it? Was that your divine intervention there?
Well, when I got the inspiration to do this program, I of course called up my colleagues in the also that do this kind of work, and got together with them and did some brainstorming, and yes, one of my good colleagues and I came up with the name.
Okay. And then the last segment on your mission is to bring healing energy to the geographical locations. Now, are you thinking, right here now it's here in Seattle, are you thinking of expanding this at some point?
Yes, if it's possible. I go as I go with this, and I do one at a time. But since we do this healing work in the location, it's this energetically is going to expand out to the geographical location. It's going to shift the energy to wherever the one gathering is. It's like if you can imagine throwing a big boulder in a pond of consciousness, the waves that go out from that, it's going to help everybody who's in the city or town or wherever it is we are.
Right. And let's just talk a little bit about some of the events that you've got going on at the event. I actually tried to get hold of one of the musicians to see if we could snag some of their music, but I did not manage to connect with them, unfortunately. But you've got Dean Evanson and Dudley Evanson.
Yes.
Joining you. Talk a little bit about their work, because it's quite, they were quite big on the web.
Yes, they. I am very honored and grateful to have Dean and Dudley Evanson involved in this year's One Gathering. They have been doing sound healing for 30 plus years, and their music, they have a number of CDs out there, and they play the flute and the handheld harp, I believe, and they'll probably have some toning bowls and some other various instruments there, because they will be tuning into the energy of when we go into the energy portion of the program. They will be playing their sound healing music to the energy of the attunement process.
Right. Now, they've sold over 2 million albums.
Yes.
Deepak Chopra, some really big, Dr. Larry Dossey, they all support their work in healing.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's great. Who else have you got coming?
I have Matt Kahn and Julie Dentmar. They are spiritual teachers and intuitive healers, and I'm very pleased and excited to have them involved as well, as they have wonderful energy, and they bring in the divine masculine and the divine feminine in their work. And I also have Reiki Master Eileen Day. She's the founder of the Reiki training program right here in Seattle. And she will do the guided meditation process into the attunement. And she's been doing this work for 15 years as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a team of wise teachers and healers at this one gathering.
Who would you say is your typical audience? You've been doing this 2 years now, but who do you think is your typical audience?
Well, I tend to have about usually spiritually open people tend to show up, but I'm really putting this out there to not only that community, but anybody who's just feeling stuck in their life and they need a lift and they would like to help feel better and feel inspired and feel lighter. Because I want to introduce people to also energy and what goes along with the concepts of energy, since we're all made up of energy.
Mm. I actually went to the first one over at Mercer Island.
Did you?
I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, which is a nice setting. It was outdoors. And
yes.
Is it going to be outdoors at the Seattle, or is it it's indoors, right?
No, it's at the Center House Theater at
in
the Seattle.
Theater.
Yes. So it'll be indoor and controlled environment, hopefully, as much as we can.
Okay. So what would you like to leave our listeners with today?
I just encourage everybody, if you resonate at all with the mission of expanding consciousness and just wanting some good enlightenment in your life, come out to the One Gathering. It's a very unique program, and it will definitely be uplifting for you. I can guarantee that for you 100%.
And we'll get attuned.
Yes. Yes.
And if listeners want to find out more about the event and more about you, where should they go?
You can go to theoneonegathering.com. And that's where you can find all the information about the guest speakers. And if you want to buy tickets, you can buy tickets off the website. And yeah.
Okay. And what if they want to find more about you?
Oh, and I'm
because you're
featured
ranking,
on,
yeah.
Yes, I'm featured on that website as well. I have a different website for my private practice, which is integratehealing.com. And you can find all about my individual work I do on that site.
Well, I appreciate you being with us today. I know you've poured your heart and soul into this, and so I really hope things go well for you. I'm sure they will, and we'll all get lifted and attuned.
Thank you.
And I want to thank each of you for tuning in and joining us today. If you have comments or feedback or questions on today's show, you can reach me at conversationslive.net. You can also call our toll-free number, 1-800 1-800-495-7617. 1-800-495-7617. 1-800-495-7617. And if you missed a show or you missed part of the show and would like to retrace it, you can find it on our website, conversationslive.net. We have dozens of free podcasts up there. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong, and thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Trust is the cornerstone of your business and personal life. But do you really understand what trust is, or how to develop trust in all areas of your life? Award-winning author and speaker Vanessa Hall joins Vicky to discuss the truth about trust in business. We'll also talk with photographer's agent and stock photography diva Danita Delamont, a local businesswoman who's developed an international million-dollar business built on trust.
Views expressed on the preceding program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KWJZ 98.9 FM, Digital HD3 Seattle. Good